my candidate, Kamala Harris, even though she'll win the popular vote by several million, she may still lose the election based upon the electoral college system we have in this country. Donald Trump's message castigates immigrants, mostly Mexican, South America, and Central America. The first thing that Trump ever expressed about politics and issues was in 2015 when he announced his candidacy for the 2016 presidential election. And it is basically an issue which he has put out there because he knows it has resonance with a great part of the population. And he's kept that up throughout.
So as you canvass voters, what do you tell them?
We're given a script, basically. This is all pretty well scripted. I would start with their attitude towards Donald Trump. I would start with that. And I would say that, and because of that, you are voting for Kamala Harris. It just depends upon what I am told by the person I've been greeted by, and I will look for a key phrase. I'll have several key phrases out there, and I'll know fairly well into the conversation if they're still sort of in the middle or not quite sure. If they're pro-Harris, I will find that out, and I will remind them to vote. Please vote. Don't forget to vote. Tell all your friends and neighbors to vote. And to the extent that I can persuade them, I'll let them go. But I can't be with them too long because I got another, 80 houses, 100 houses to go to.
On that note, Bill Maestas, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
Thank you, John.
This is John Crumshaw with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735 or pledge online at kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esti Chandler. In the years since the Israeli military began their genocidal mission in Gaza, Israeli soldiers have posted thousands of videos and photos on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. These videos and photos form the foundation of the most recent feature-length investigation by Al Jazeera's investigative unit titled Gaza, which exposes Israeli war crimes in the Gaza Strip by featuring those photos and videos posted online by Israeli soldiers over the past year when they were serving in Israel's military as they executed the destruction of the besieged coastal enclave known as the Gaza Strip. Al Jazeera's investigative unit built a database of thousands of photos and videos and social media posts, including the identities of the posters and those who appear in the media alongside them where possible. The material reveals a range of illegal activities from wanton destruction and looting to the demolition of entire neighborhoods, murder, and very likely, in some cases, war crimes. Like a video placed online by members of Israel's paratroopers battalion, which shows at least three unarmed men being shot by snipers. The film also shows the brutal military campaign through the eyes of Palestinian journalists, human rights workers, and ordinary citizens in the Gaza Strip as it exposes the complicity of Western governments. We are very fortunate to have the director of Gaza, Richard Sanders, with us from London to discuss the shocking footage included in the film, which includes a video that reveals horrific new details of the treatment of prisoners at the Stetiman Detention Center in Israel. Richard Sanders is an award-winning filmmaker with 60 films to his credit, including the documentaries Blair at War and Invading Iraq, How Britain and America Got It Wrong. Sanders' films have largely been made for Britain's Channel 4, but also for BBC, Sky News, and PBS's Frontline, here in the U.S. He's also authored two history books. In the last 3 years, Richard has primarily worked for Al Jazeera's investigative unit. in 2022, making a film presenting an alternative perspective on the allegations of anti-Semitism against the leader of Britain's Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn. A film on the events of October 7th, and most recently, the feature documentary we'll be discussing today, which chronicles Israeli war crimes in the Gaza Strip, primarily through videos and photos posted online by Israeli soldiers themselves. It is my great pleasure to welcome Richard Sanders to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you for having me.
I want to just dive right in to discussing your extraordinary film, because while Western government leaders and mainstream media figures are declaring full support for Israel's self-defense from terrorism, your film shows evidence of massive disproportionality and exposes supporters, enablers, and most likely, in some cases, war criminals. As international law expert Rodney Dixon Casey says in the film about the database of videos, photos, and social media posts that your team compiled, often, as I mentioned, not only identifying the individual soldiers who posted the material on social media platforms, but also others who appear with them. He said, quote, "It is a treasure trove which you very seldom come across," end quote. He also says, is something which I think prosecutors will be licking their lips at, end quote. Richard, on day one, Israeli General Gallant announced that no humanitarian aid would be let into Gaza, no food, no water, no medicine or fuel, which in and of itself is a war crime. Can you talk about the database of social media posts and some of the events depicted, which at very least disprove the stated mission that Western governments and mainstream media figures are parroting, that the mission is to root out Hamas, and at worst show, as I said, war crimes?
Well, I think the essence of the film is summed up by the Palestinian writer Susan Abu Hawa right at the top of the film, and when she says essentially no one can say they didn't know. We know exactly what is happening in the Gaza Strip, partly because in an age of iPhones and social media, Palestinians are posting it the whole time. But we know above all because Israelis are telling us what they're doing. So as you say, the film is rooted in these extraordinary videos and photographs and social media posts placed online by Israeli soldiers. We also, you know, we use the statements of Israeli politicians. We look at Israeli media, and we also look at Israeli civilian social media. Now, in the West, when people are not overtly pro-Israel, they will take refuge in the idea that this is all terribly complicated. It's all terribly nuanced. Now, what we're saying is listen to Israelis. You know, listen to Israelis themselves say about this. They don't think it's complicated. They don't think it's nuanced. Now, what do these videos, particularly the soldiers' videos, show? A military behaving in an entirely unprofessional manner. And yes, as you say, in a number of instances, displaying an astonishing sense of impunity. And they are posting things that certainly appear to be war crimes. And, you know, we know international investigators are looking into this, and we very much hope they will make use of the material presented in the film and other material that is being gathered by other investigators, you know, drawn from the Israelis' own material.
Right. You know, the material in the film also illuminates the complete and utter sense of impunity, as you were just mentioning, that not only Israeli politicians and military leaders espouse and act with, but also that of the soldiers that are posting these photos and videos of their actions, depicting intentional cruelty and humiliation inflicted, as some of them say themselves, for revenge. Can you talk about the tone and the themes that you found in these TikTok videos and other media posts that were edited by the posters and often set to music and posted sometimes on the soldiers' own personal media pages, which not only the Israeli government is clearly aware of, but all supporting and enabling governments like the U.S. and that of Britain as well?
Yeah, so they posted on TikTok, they posted on Facebook, they posted on Instagram, they put it on YouTube with a complete sense of impunity, but also in that they're allowed to do this, and there doesn't seem to be any problem with them doing this, suggests a sense of impunity from the high command and from the government as well. I mean, one thing I would say about the content of these videos, we didn't have to root around to find particularly unpleasant, particularly shocking videos. It's all like this. It isn't like there's a huge trove of videos where soldiers are just doing normal soldier stuff, which we've ignored. It's all like this. Now, so what does it show? It goes in a sort of ascending order. The bottom end, jokes, endless jokes, and just remarkably unfunny and extremely unpleasant jokes. For example, they will knock on a door, no answer, they'll knock again, and then the camera pulls up to show that there's the house no longer exists behind the door. This is a joke they never cease to find funny. They post this repeatedly. Mock estate agents tours of ruined buildings and so on. The really quite sinister thing that really bears psychological analysis of their obsession with women's underwear. They're always rooting through the underwear drawers of women and dressing up in their clothing. Now, all of that stuff shows a contemptuous, belittling attitude to the civilian population and the houses they have occupied. As you move up the scale, frequently as they leave houses that they have been occupying, they set them on fire. And then probably the most common thing, what you see more than anything else, is the detonation, the explosion of buildings. Now, this isn't airstrikes. This is buildings, often whole apartment blocks, whole universities being detonated from the ground. Now, the point about this is that they also film themselves going in and setting the explosives. Now, as various people in the film point out, by definition, if you can walk into a building and spend hours rigging up explosives, there's no one in that building. Striking thing as well, you know, they're clearly competing for clicks. People who know about these things have looked at this and said to me, they're using far more explosive than they need to destroy the building. They're making as big a bang as they possibly can. Now, wanton destruction, willful destruction, is a war crime. They're the wanton destruction of civilian property. And you can hear them shouting and laughing as they do it and saying, so they will have nowhere to come back to. The, if not genocidal, certainly the ethnic cleansing intent is quite clear. And also they talk all the time about revenge, all the time about revenge. They're very rarely talking about military objectives. Very quickly, before I sort of carry on ascending the scale, as it were, one very striking thing that one almost never sees or very rarely sees in these soldiers' videos is combat. You very rarely see them actually fighting. You know, every now and then you see them all standing up and firing astonishing amounts of ammunition, but they're standing up and there's no incoming. So there's very, very, very little actual fighting. Now, you move up the scale, you then have these shots of detainees, which I think we're all now quite familiar with, which is clearly absolutely routine, people being stripped to their underwear, men in particular, although it does happen to women as well, but certainly men being filmed, stripped to their underwear, being humiliated, being dragged around, being beaten in some cases. In one video, a French Israeli soldier, and it's very striking how many of these people are clearly dual nationals. You can just tell from the language they're speaking. A French Israeli soldier says, you look at his back, this will make you laugh. We tortured him to make him speak, you know. So again, this is posted online in his own name. And then you carry on up the scale and you get ultimately to potential unlawful killing. And perhaps the most remarkable video we came across is this sort of commemorative video for the 202nd Paratroopers Battalion. And you have three unarmed men being shot by snipers. And they themselves have put this on YouTube. Now, since our film came out, it's been taken off YouTube, but it was up there for 6 months without this creating a problem at all, apparently.
It's really, really incredible. You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK from Los Angeles. I'm Esty Chandler, very happy to be joined today by award-winning filmmaker Richard Sanders about his most recent feature documentary for Al Jazeera's investigative unit, Gaza, which chronicles Israeli war crimes in the Gaza Strip over the past year, primarily documented through videos and photos posted online by Israeli soldiers themselves. As you know, KPFK is a listener-supported public radio station, which is why you don't hear commercials during our shows. We're part of the Pacifica Network, which is proudly now celebrating our 75th anniversary of being on the air. The idea for the Pacifica network of public radio stations was born out of a detention camp where conscientious objectors were forcibly detained during World War II. KPFK and the network were created by people who were alarmed by the power that large corporations and governments had in shaping the stories that were told, which, as we know so well, in turn, shape the public narrative. KPFK and Pacifica took a bold move in choosing not to rely on corporations or our governments for funding. Instead, for 75 years, we have relied on the community that we serve to keep us running. We do this both by inviting people to donate their time and labor to this endeavor, and also by reaching out to the community we serve, to you, to our listeners, asking you to donate whatever you can afford to keep us turning out the quality shows you continue tuning into and listening to week after week. So I'm asking you now to help us keep going, help us continue to raise the voices of people like our guest today, award-winning director Richard Sanders, by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735 to make a contribution. Or you can quickly and easily donate by logging on to kpfk.org now. Richard, I believe, also immediately banned from getting into Gaza were foreign journalists, while Palestinian press personnel clearly began to be targeted and killed. As homes and apartment buildings, in addition to civilian infrastructure, began to be bombed immediately after October 7, Plus 972 and other media outlets began reporting about artificial intelligence being used to create high-value target lists, employing new software applications, including ones called Lavender and Where's Daddy. In the film, you tell the story about the Al Jazeera Gaza bureau chief, Wael Dadu, and his family. Can you talk about that story and what the investigative unit's investigation turned up about the general targeting of journalists in Gaza?
Yes. So the reporting in 972 magazine is really quite astonishing. Now, important to say, and we include this in the film, the Israelis have denied this reporting. As so often, the Israeli denial appears to be contradicted by demonstrable facts. And I think it's very important to make that clear. So often, Israeli denials are reported in such a way that the listener or the viewer is left with the impression, well, it's 50-50, who knows who's telling the truth. People can watch our film, they can look at the Israeli denial, which we repeat, you know, we put in detail at the end of the film. But it doesn't seem to me to do justice to the evidence that's been presented. So 972 magazine, what they discovered was that basically the Israelis weren't able to achieve a strike rate fast enough. They couldn't hit targets as quickly as they wanted using normal human identification of targets. So they developed this extraordinary system called Lavender, where you basically scrape people's social media, you track their phone, you look at who they've been talking to, whose phones they are near, absolutely everything you can about them. They have this extraordinary capacity for surveillance over these caged people within Gaza. And then what they do is they draw up a sort of points system. And if you've acquired enough points, then there's a ping next to your name. Now, there's the most basic check is then done by a human being, which appears to consist simply of checking that they're not a woman. Because as a general rule, if it's a woman, they're unlikely to be a Hamas fighter. But if they're a man, then they go ahead and kill them. You know, it's extraordinary. Even more appalling is the secondary bit of AI, which is called Where's Daddy? And the point being that it's much easier to kill people when they're at home. And so when the person's phone arrives at their house, again, there'll be a ping to the targeter and the house can be destroyed, obviously with Daddy and everyone else who is in it.
It's truly shocking. The film also presents a lot of evidence of very sadistic torture, including at prisons and prisoner camps, and even during the evacuation of hospitals, which continues as we speak in northern Gaza. Israeli officials and many people in American mainstream media love to repeat the claim that Hamas uses human shields. But I would love for you just to discuss the examples in the film that highlights the use of human shields.
Yes. Now, this is a story that belatedly CNN and the New York Times and the Guardian and so on are catching up with. One side of it, anyway. The thing about human shields really does make me very, very angry, because when you listen to Western politicians grilled about the appalling death toll, what they will invariably say is, but yes, this is fundamentally Hamas's fault because they hide among the civilian population. This is never interrogated. This is never questioned. Now, if you actually look into that, the only sense in which Hamas hides among the civilian population is that they and the civilian population share the same very small patch of territory. Now, I think people would get the impression from the use of the term human shields that they're actually sort of hiding behind people and imprisoning people and not letting them go away while they launch attacks and so on, which simply isn't the case. I mean, there's absolutely no evidence for that at all. And you would have no idea of that by watching CNN or the BBC or whoever. And it's shocking. You know, a Palestinian friend said to me recently, you know, bad journalism kills. This is the justification. This is what's placed into the minds of the Western public that, they had no choice but to kill these people. Maha Husseini from Euromed Human Rights Monitor also makes a very powerful point in our film. What is there about Israeli behavior over the last year that would lead you to think that the presence of civilians would lead them to hold their fire? There is nothing whatsoever to indicate that the use of Palestinians as human shields would serve any purpose whatsoever, a really simple sort of logical point. Now, there's then the secondary thing, that there is a mass of evidence that the Israelis routinely use Palestinian civilians as human shields and have done for years. Now, this, as I say, finally, the Western media is catching up with. CNN did it in the last couple of days. New York Times, Haaretz has done a very good report on this within Israel as well. So that one finally does seem to be being acknowledged. But the first part is terribly important, because without that justification, then we're clearly simply looking at the wholesale slaughter of civilians.
That's right. I apologize. We only have a few minutes left, but Israel has created an entire generation of child amputees and orphans who are quite clearly being emotionally and psychologically traumatized by what they're witnessing, which, as you started off the conversation with, award-winning novelist and activist Susan Abulaha speaks to in the film. Can you speak about that part of the film that focuses on the children?
Yes, it's around a third of the dead children. It's impossible to know exact figures. A horrific number of children under the age of one. I mean, I think, you know, when the dust finally settles, as it were, there will be an appalling number of maimed children, not to mention an entire generation of traumatized children. And you feel profound shame, actually. And you do feel that future generations are going to look back and just think, you know, how could we have let this happen?
Yes. The children in the film definitely are what is gut-wrenching to watch, I must say. But really, you know, the compilation, the work that you guys have done with this database is something that the world needs to see. You know, we continue to be very, very grateful for the work of your investigative unit. Any chance that you can tell us about any forthcoming projects?
Not at the moment. What I would say to your viewers, though, is we are resolutely, determinedly ignored by mainstream media, who, you know, months and sometimes years later finally get round to reporting what we've reported. The film is available on YouTube. Search Al Jazeera. Search Investigating War Crimes in Gaza. Search for that. Just Gaza makes it rather difficult to find. Investigating War Crimes in Gaza on YouTube. Al Jazeera. And just please, just share the film as much as possible.
And you want to say in our last minute how to find the prior documentaries that you've done on the topic?
Yeah, so the previous one was October 7. So again, Al Jazeera, October 7. You'll find that on YouTube as well. And then the previous one to that, perhaps a little obscure for American listeners, but it's The Labor Files, the series was called. My film was episode 2. You know, because you have the same phenomenon in America. It's a really minute picking apart of the way allegations of anti-Semitism were used against Jeremy Corbyn, who was a radical left leader of the Labour Party.
Yeah, I agree. Very important for Americans to understand that as well. Richard, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your weekend to be with us. Israeli authorities did not provide answers to any of the allegations issued to them by Al Jazeera's investigative unit. The documentary we've been discussing is dedicated to the memory of all the media workers killed by the Israeli military in the Gaza Strip since October 7, 2023, which includes four killed while working for Al Jazeera. They are Samer Adu Dakwa, Hamza Al Dadu, Ismail Al Ghul, and Rami Al Rifi. And also to the memory of the family of Al Jazeera Gaza Bureau Chief Wael Dadu, Amna, Mohammed, Sham, and Adam. And to the family members of the colleagues of the filmmakers, Mumin Al Sharif, Anas Al Sharif, and Mohammed Abdul Al Kumsan, also killed by Israeli forces, and to 15-year-old Yahya Al Helu, brother of Mohammed, killed on September 23rd. Negwa and I both take the responsibility of bringing you stories and guests that you just won't be likely to hear on mainstream corporate media outlets, as our guest, Richard Sanders, has just made clear. Filmmakers, journalists, writers, academics, and activists, not only discussing the international crisis of an ongoing genocide in Gaza, but also the emergency in the West Bank and the Israeli government's expanding their war into Lebanon, Syria, and still threatening an attack on Iran, as well as our own government's role in arming, funding, and providing intelligence for the genocide, and additional public and private institutions further materially supporting this genocide. I'm asking you, our audience, who rely on this show and so many others on KPFK, to please help us continue to bring you these important voices by making a pledge now. You can do that by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Or you can donate quickly and easily by logging on to our website at kpfk.org to make a contribution and keep Middle East in Focus and the many other informative shows at KPFK on the air. As you've been hearing all year, KPFK and the Pacifica Network continue to live on the edge. Please don't let us fall over the edge and off the air. Unfortunately, it would not be the first time the network went temporarily silent due to the lack of funding. And you don't need me to tell you how incredibly high the stakes are right now. So we just cannot allow that to happen again. We're all hands on deck here at KPFK doing what we can to keep bringing you the news and information you rely on. Please help us continue that mission by calling 818-985-5735 or by logging on to kpfk.org and making whatever size pledge you can today. The big ones move us closer to our needs, and the small ones add up to get us there as well. All donations are greatly appreciated. Once again, I want to thank our guest, Richard Sanders. You can see his most recent film, Gaza, by the Al Jazeera Investigative Unit, which exposes Israeli war crimes in the Gaza Strip by featuring photos and videos posted online by Israeli soldiers themselves on Al Jazeera's YouTube channel. I also want to thank Mark Maxwell for his production support today. Our theme song is the overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esty Chandler, thanking you for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.
Thank you for tuning in to KPFK, your listener-sponsored radio station. This week, we'll be wrapping up our fund drive, so time is running out for us to reach our goal and cover our expenses. If you haven't already, please make your pledge now to help KPFK continue providing important, fact-based journalism without corporate influence. You can do that at kpfk.org/donate or by calling 818-985-5735 to make a contribution. KPFK has been addressing the world's